This is Radio Boston. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We'll begin today with news from Washington. This morning, Special Counsel Robert Mueller spoke at the Justice Department, announcing the end of his 2-year appointment as Special Counsel overseeing the Russia investigation. Mueller re-emphasized the report's findings and said this.
If we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. We did not, however, make a determination as to whether the president did commit a crime.
He went on to explain that a long-standing Department of Justice policy prohibiting the indictment of a sitting president and therefore charging the president with a crime was not an option.
The opinion says that the Constitution requires a process other than the criminal justice system to formally accuse a sitting president of wrongdoing. And beyond department policy, we were guided by principles of fairness. It would be unfair to potentially accuse somebody of a crime when there can be no court resolution of the actual charge.
In other words, ball's in your court, Congress. So let's turn to a member of the Massachusetts delegation. Ayanna Pressley represents the 7th Congressional District. Congresswoman Pressley, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hello.
So first, I want to start with getting your reaction to Mueller speaking today. What was your takeaway?
Well, again, it's a reemphasizing of what we already knew. I think Mueller is a by the book guy. He's a constitutionalist. He parsed his language both in his summary and in the rare public statements that he has made since then. On purpose, for all the reasons that we already know. And so, you know, he neither indicted or exonerated the occupant of the corner office in this White House. But again, Congress is a co-equal branch of government. I think he's given us both the breadcrumbs and the runway to do our job and to assume our role. And that is exactly why I have been supportive of the initiating impeachment investigations.
Okay, and I know you have been calling for impeachment for some time. I want to talk next steps, what Congress should do next. I know Congressman Jerry Nadler and Steny Hoyer want Robert Mueller still to come in to testify. Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the investigations will continue, and Congresswoman Catherine Clark, fellow member of the Massachusetts delegation and a member of leadership, was calling for Republicans to join in and also hold the president accountable along with Democrats. What specifically would you like to see happen next?
Well, I think we have, that we continue to do what we've already been doing. I mean, again, personally, I do see more people are coming on to this position and signing on to the resolution that was offered respectively by Representatives Tlaib and Green. And I agree with Representative Green, who has said that it would be a dereliction of duty. I mean, again, all of this is about Trump, but this is bigger than Trump. This is about the presidency. And this is about the dangerous precedence that is being set when we don't hold accountable the occupant in this administration, many of whom have come before me in committee, from Secretary Ross of Commerce, Secretary Mnuchin of Treasury, Secretary Carson of HUD, and they stonewall and obstruct. No one in this administration is doing their job. In fact, all they're doing is hurting the American people, holding them hostage to the oppressive, draconian, and life-threatening and family-separating policies that are being rolled out, sometimes it seems by the hour. So when people say that we must wait, I don't think we have the luxury of that. I know the people in the Massachusetts 7th don't have the luxury of that, a district that's 53% people of color and 40% foreign-born. Mm-hmm. So I want, I would love to see decisive support of this resolution. And again, I offer that with a heavy heart. You know, this is not anything. I didn't come to Congress to impeach a president. Mm. This is not what I want to do, but I believe we have no other choice. It is what we must do. This is about the preservation and restoration of our democracy, the trust and faith of the American people, and getting this government working again. Now, while they continue to stonewall and obstruct at every turn, this Democratic majority Congress continues to do our job, and that is to lead and that is to legislate. If Mitch McConnell wants it to be his legacy that he's killing every piece of legislation that would uplift, support, and advance the American people, then that's on him.
Okay.
But this Democratic majority Congress, we are doing our job, not only by leading and legislating on everything from consumer protection to climate change to gun violence prevention to voting rights, but also in the work of our committees.
And Congresswoman Presley, and you mentioned Secretaries Mnuchin and Carson. I want to talk a little bit more like that and about them in just a moment, but I want to drill down a little bit more. Speaker Pelosi so far has been against impeachment in part because she said it would be too divisive for the country and said that it would need to be a fully bipartisan effort. You are supportive, as you said, of impeachment. You said more people seem to be coming on board. Is there impatience growing among the Democratic caucus with the speaker on this issue?
I can't really speak to that. I think that ultimately we all have the same goal, and that is to keep, restore the American people's trust and faith in our democracy and our government, and to get at the truth and to hold this administration accountable. I think we have different ideas tactically about how to do that, sequentially about how to do that, but we all want the same thing. But I think that there are differing opinions about how to get there. Mm. So I think there are some people that see us at a 50-yard line, sort of tactically moving a ball up the field, and there are others that say we should throw a long pass.
All right. Okay.
So that's the crossroads we find ourselves at. But, and again, this is with a heavy and sobered heart, because this is a sad inflection point for our country. But again, I think not advancing forward is a dereliction of duty.
Congresswoman, I want to turn to two of your recent engagements with members of the Trump administration. First, U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin at a House Financial Services Committee hearing last week. You asked Secretary Mnuchin about a plan under the Obama administration to redesign the $20 bill to feature abolitionist Harriet Tubman by 2020. Let's listen.
Right now, I am focused on the security features of the U.S. currency, which is the reserve currency.
You're claiming my time. So does that mean you have no intention of executing the redesign as planned by your predecessor?
Well, that is correct. I have not made a decision to execute on a redesign or haven't made a decision. But yes, I have not made
a
decision.
Can you commit to submitting a currency redesign timeline to this committee?
Again, the currency timeline will be most likely 2026.
So, in other words, if this happens, it'll be long past the Trump administration and Secretary Mnuchin's tenure. What are you satisfied with the response that the secretary gave?
No, I'm not satisfied. But again, it's par for the course with this administration from the corner office and all the way down. This has been true for every cabinet member that has come before us in committee, whether it be financial services or oversight and reform. This is a lack of transparency in the decision-making process. This is a new Congress, and we're going to hold them accountable, and that's exactly why I continue to push on the issue. And so we'll continue to organize and mobilize to push this administration to honor the timeline and the promises that were made by his predecessor in Secretary Liu. And I do want to give a shout-out to Women on the 20s for their advocacy in elevating this to national consciousness and prominence. And if you saw that whole exchange, you know that I wanted to create a floor with Secretary Mnuchin, and so I said, do you agree about the importance of representation in our American politics and imagery? And he said yes. And then, you know, seconds later, he would not say for the record that it is important that the diversity of representation of people who have contributed to this country be represented on our currency. Mm. He would not say that on the record in his role as secretary or even personally. And we know that certainly more than white men built this country. And so women and people of color should be represented on our currency. And this is just a part of, you know, it's really disruptive and not in keeping with the policies of the Treasury. This is when they do these redesigns. And so he he is willing to honor the redesign for the purposes of addressing fraud, but not for the purposes of redesigning imagery.
And I want to talk about another exchange during a different Financial Services Committee hearing. This one was between you and HUD Secretary Ben Carson over a proposed plan that would remove public housing assistance for undocumented immigrants and cut the housing budget by more than 16%. Let's listen.
Do you believe the substandard public housing conditions pose a risk to tenants' physical, mental, and emotional health?
You already know the answer to that.
Yes or no?
You know the answer.
Yes or no? I know the answer. Do you know the answer? Yes or no?
Reclaiming my time.
You don't get to do that.
No.
Now, I want to get your reaction on a couple of fronts. One, on the way that Secretary Carson spoke to you and other members of that committee, but also about what this plan would mean for the people in the 7th District.
Well, I think Secretary Carson, in his smug and dismissive and callous display, proved that he is profoundly unqualified to be leading this agency, which is overseeing our nation's crumbling housing stock. You know, as I said, this is not supposed to be a political process, but I think every day this administration is playing out their political beliefs. And I don't believe that being poor is a character flaw. And I don't believe that we should be separating families and decimating whole communities. And so in Cambridge alone, this would impact 196 families. For the Massachusetts 7th Congressional District, there are about 250,000 foreign-born residents making great contributions to our economic, social, and cultural vibrancy and life every day. And this inhumane proposed rule, and I want to underscore that it's proposed, this is not the rule of law. And we need people to organize and to weigh in. There's a public comment period through to June 30th. I will be socializing on my platforms how people can make their voices heard in this this public comment period. But this is simply a proposed rule, and it is a frightening one. This administration is not to be trusted with the sanctity and the preservation of families. We have a humanitarian crisis at the border, and they're creating one throughout our country, and certainly in this Commonwealth and in the Massachusetts 7th Congressional District, with so many of the policies that have already been rolled out. By targeting immigrant families, they are putting them at risk for eviction, for homelessness, and family separation. And so I'll just continue to push back on the occupant of this White House and the hateful policies they're rolling out every day that stand to hurt and devastate Americans, but more specifically, the district that I was charged to fight for and to represent in Congress every day, and that's the Massachusetts 7th.
And I want to talk about another one of your priorities, the Consumers First Act passed the House last week with one of your amendments that would protect consumers from abusive debt collectors. It would require that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau reverse actions made by the previous acting director, Mick Mulvaney, who is now acting chief of staff in the White House. Talk a bit more about this amendment and what it will do.
Yeah, well, what it is that my amendment calls for additional reporting on consumer complaints and enforcement actions that have been taken against debt collectors. It really empowers, Congress with this information to hold this industry accountable, to make sure that they are, in fact, putting consumers first. And it also puts into place safeguards to prevent debt collectors. My amendment puts a cap on sort of expanding their scope and their reach so that they can't send unlimited text messages or emails to consumers as an easy tool for harassment. And so I'm so pleased this amendment was adopted, really proud of the work that went into the Consumers First Act under the leadership of Chairwoman Waters. Again, this is another example of the fact that this Democratic majority Congress continues to lead on those issues of consequence to the American people. And so the things that they have gutted, we are restoring them, putting consumers first and protecting them from predatory businesses and lenders.
And it's tough. The tough road comes in the Senate, right? I mean, it's passed the House. What chances do you think that this has there? And are you lobbying your colleagues in the upper chamber?
I certainly will be, and I'll just add that, you know, I've been in Congress 4 months. I've, you know, co-sponsored probably 115 bills, you know, very, very thoughtfully and intentionally in my time there. But I've been a lead sponsor on 4 bills, and for each of those, I've reached out to have bicameral support to have a Senate sponsor in the hopes that it would increase the likelihood of it moving. This is an issue, like so many others, that really should not be bipartisan. And so, yes, we'll be creative and tactical and doing whatever we can to get this and other bills passed. And it's, again, it's unconscionable that Mitch McConnell takes pride in killing everything that we send over to the Senate. But I'm an eternal optimist, so we're just going to keep doing our job.
And I want to talk about an institution within your district, the Museum of Fine Arts. We will hear from MFA Director Matthew Teitelbaum in just a bit. But I want to talk to you after the incident of racist remarks being made to a group of students of color coming to light last week. What would you like to see the museum do moving forward?
Well, stay tuned on that. You know, I'm in talks with both the MFA and the school and the students, and so we'll see where we go from there. I don't, you know, I always want to engage those who have been impacted and affected by an incident and determine next steps in partnership with them. But, you know, the reality is that myself and my colleagues are doing the work every day of dismantling institutionalized racism systems and discriminatory policies that have contributed to the inequities in this district. The issue of racism itself and racial profiling and bias and bigotry, these are all things that are unfortunately ingrained into our cultural DNA. I won't throw up my hands, though, and say that it means it'll never change, because what is culture but human behavior? And it can be disrupted and it can be changed. But I think one of the chief ways we do that is when there are consequences. And hopefully that's a deterrent, and people know that when we say zero tolerance, we really mean that. This is an adopted home for me, but it's been my experience that there are many places, unfortunately, of public accommodation that, although they are supposed to accommodate the public, that feel unwelcoming and hostile. And so every time that happens, we have to tell the truth about it. And I agree with my former colleague and still dear friend on the city council, Kim Janey, who said that we should stop saying that this is not who we are and we're better than this. How can we ever fix it if we're not honest about the fact that these things do happen? They happen every day. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't do the hard and real work if we're not willing to tell the hard and painful truth. And these are not one-offs. These are not anomalies. These are things that happen every day. And, you know, it's no different than I remember during the Me Too movement, people would ask me, can you give an example of when you've experienced sexual harassment? And I couldn't come up with one because it's such a conflated part of my identity as a woman. But I'm still going to do everything I can legislatively and culturally to change that, which is why I introduced the Be Heard Act to address sexual harassment and violence and workplace discrimination. But it's a conflated part of my identity as a woman. And unfortunately, racial profiling and bigotry and prejudice is a conflated part of my identity as a Black woman. And so, you know, every time these things occur, it is a reminder of the work that we still have to do.
And I want to talk about 2020 for a moment. Among the Democrats running include three people from New England and two from the Massachusetts delegation, Senator Elizabeth Warren and Congressman Seth Moulton. They've picked up some endorsements from folks, but yours is one of the most coveted, and you seem to be holding it close to the vest so far. Do you plan on endorsing soon?
Well, I've been in Congress 4 months. And had the unenviable history-making a note of being onboarded in the midst of a federal government shutdown. So I've been busy. I'm just head down, you know, focused on learning and doing my job, what the people of the Massachusetts 7th sent me there to do before I am jumping in on anything of a political nature. But I commend all the candidates. It takes a tremendous courage to put yourself out there. And in Massachusetts, so far as the number of people that we've put forward, that's what we do in Massachusetts. You know, we produce leaders here, and we produce presidential candidates, and you know, presidents too. So that's just what we do in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And you know, it seems that the field is growing by the day. So I'm like everyone else, just trying to keep up. And looking forward to better understanding what each candidate has to offer and what their vision is for America, and specifically the policies that they're rolling out and how that will benefit the Massachusetts 7th.
And I'm going to turn one last question in the few seconds we have left in the style that you questioned your former colleague from the city council, Michelle Wu. Do you think that she should challenge Marty Walsh in the election, yes or no?
I don't tell anybody what to do. not even my 10-year-old daughter. You know, she's got her own mind. And you know, no one's had great success in telling me what to do in my life. So I'm certainly not going to do that for anyone. You know, but I will say I have tremendous respect for all of my current and former colleagues on the city and state level. They work tirelessly on behalf of the city of Boston, and we're fortunate to have both of them.
All right. Well, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley from Massachusetts 7th District, thanks so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, MFA Director Matthew Teitelbaum on a racist incident at the museum and where the MFA goes from here. I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is Radio Boston.